Today on 1001 Albums, I'll be discussing Michael Jackson's Bad with Joel from the Movie Multiverse podcast.
It is quite different from anything I've ever recorded or I've ever written.
Uh-huh.
It's a bold statement to say, but I mean it in all goodwill, you know, so don't take
it's
it too
seriously.
It's a
good modesty, of course.
Yeah, I'm saying, it's like a way of saying you're cool, you're all right, you're tough. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I'm like criminally bad. Of
sure.
course, that's how people would take it. It's a bold statement to make.
Welcome back to 1001 Albums podcast. Joel, how are you doing?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
You are more than welcome. Again, I know.
Yeah. well, I don't know what order this is going to be. Yeah.
Well, we have just recorded our discussion on Green Day. So if you're, and Dookie specifically. So if
right.
you guys are just dropping in for the Michael Jackson chat, then obviously go and listen to us talking about Dookie, because that was a really,
yes.
Really good, interesting conversation. But yeah, today we're going to be talking about quite a controversial figure.
Yeah.
Was controversial at the time this album came out, but obviously has become more controversial in the preceding years as well.
Yeah.
So without burying the lead, what we're talking about is Michael Jackson Bad,
mm-hmm.
Which was what, 1987?
87.
And was an absolutely huge album when it came out, one of the biggest selling albums of all time. And a massive influence on music. It's here on the list, as you would expect it to be. You can't not be on a list of the 1001 albums because it is so big, so important, and so great.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, just give us your initial thoughts on the album and sort of, you know, your initial memories of getting into this album, really.
Yeah. Well, I've been a lifelong Michael Jackson fan. I mean, as early as I can remember, the first time I've ever been like really like moved by music or music made me feel anything at all as like a very young child, it's like Michael Jackson. You know, he, you know, things like Bad, like Man in the Mirror, like The Way You Make Me Feel, like everything on that. Like I was three when this album came out. So I can't say that I had a significant experience upon its release, but it was obviously a huge part of pop culture.
Sure.
All through my childhood. And my very first CD that I ever owned, my parents gave me like a CD player boombox thing for Christmas. I think I want to say in 93 when I was like nine, no, probably 92. I think I was eight for Christmas. I got my first CD player, and the first CD that I had with that CD player was Michael Jackson Dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I still love that album a lot. That came out in 93. So actually, this probably was 93 that happened. Anyway, that was my first CD, was Michael Jackson Dangerous. So that's like the first thing that I really had a connection with. But you know, Michael Jackson is so singular, and he's so like, it was tough, you know, because we talked about doing this podcast, and you know, you reached out to both Casey and I about doing it, and me being such a massive Michael Jackson fan that Casey knows, he was the first one to reach out to me and say, hey, you know, Bad is on here, you could do Bad. And I was like, yeah, well, totally. But like, it's hard to ride for Michael Jackson right now, which is, like you said, controversial, mm. everything that's going on. And, you know, the recent you know, documentary that came out and stuff like that. But like, obviously he was a very troubled person, and that's one thing that, you know, you can't really defend or say much about these days. But as a musician and as an artist and as a visionary, that's something that I still think has a lot of value in this world, and what he was able to do musically, and the way he, you know, the kind of things that he wanted to express to the world, especially starting with Bad. You know, the Bad was the first album that had things like Man in the Mirror on it, and that became, you know, a big part of his message and what he devoted his career to. But like, up until Bad, it was just really good, you know, funk, R&B, pop music before that. You had things like Thriller and things like Billie Jean and even, you know, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough and Rock With You. You know, those are all amazing songs. He's an incredible singer. He's an incredible performer, incredible dancer. Those were all things that were great about him, but he really started to have something to say when it came to Bad. And that became, I think, his biggest career legacy, was what he had to say. And that, I think, really started with Bad. And, you know, it's a major album as far as that. And I, you know, also musically, I think he invented his own genre of music starting with Bad too. He modernized funk and R&B in a way that changed everything. You know,
you're absolutely right. Nothing sounds like Michael Jackson. Like, no. even though
everybody tries and nobody sounds like him.
Yeah. I mean, Justin Timberlake and Pharrell, and these people have based Bruno their careers Mars. Off Michael Jackson. But there's something about those. You just listen to the, you know, even thinking about how the album starts with Bad, and the bass and these keyboards, they're so clean, and they've got that 80s kind of sheen about them. And it does sound dated. I mean, like, even with them, then when you get onto like The Way You Make Me Feel, I mean, I think that does sound very dated. Even the
those big thunderous drums. Yeah,
exactly. It is dated, but there's just something so special about it. There's this music is just, it doesn't, it's almost otherworldly. It's not like you can say, and as well, because it is so electronic and what Quincy Jones is doing in the production, it's not like, drums, bass, guitar, like you can pick out with, you know, with Thriller or with Off the Wall. You can hear the strings, drums, bass. Bad is just even like, what? I don't even know what is going on here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a layer. I don't think anything has touched that in terms of production.
You know, this was his final collaboration that he did with Quincy Jones. And I think Quincy Jones was an innovator as well in his own right. But Michael Jackson had a lot to say, and it was a lot he wanted to do. He was so ambitious. He was always so ambitious. Like, even as a child in Jackson 5, he always wanted more. And after being in Jackson 5, and he wanted to be a solo artist, nobody gave a shit. Nobody cared. Nobody cared about Michael Jackson anymore after Jackson 5. If it's not Jackson 5, then we don't want you. He was chopping his demos around. He recorded Don't Stop Till You Get Enough in his house in Indiana with his brothers as like, this is going to be my solo career, after they got dropped from Motown. Because, you know, Michael Jackson did some solo stuff for Motown, but it was all very much like lumped in with the same kind of Jackson 5 thing.
Yeah, he did Ben was a solo single, wasn't it? Ben. And there was...
Yeah. And then there was stuff like Got to Be There, you know, that song. That was a Michael Jackson solo song, and you know, lots of others. Music and Me was another album he did for Motown. But after Motown, it was like, no, Michael Jackson's done. He was a cute kid and everything, but he's grown up now, and nobody wants to hear that. But that was Quincy Jones. He heard his home demos of Don't Stop Till You Get Enough and thought, no, there's definitely something here, and took him on and started collaborating. But like, I think they pushed one another for sure. You know, Quincy Jones had more of a technical know-how of producing and things like that, because Michael Jackson didn't really play instruments, you know, but he was a very prolific composer. He would compose every part with his voice. You know, he was just so melodically, he was just such a melodic genius that he could write every part. He could write the bass part. He could write the synth part. He could write the drum parts. Like, he would beatbox the drum parts and say, play it exactly like this. Exactly. He was very, very tough on his musicians because he knew exactly what he wanted.
You know, I'm going to want that more, right? It's funkier. I'm not feeling that part enough.
He would say, play this exact beat, and he would beatbox it. He would record it. He would either play them a recording of him beatboxing, or he would beatbox it for them and say, this is the drum part. This is going to be the synthesizer part. This is going to be the string part. This is going to be the bass part. Like, all that stuff, he knew exactly. He would compose these songs with nothing but just knowing about melody and being able to use his voice. And Quincy Jones was somebody who was a lot, you know, was a musician and could play piano and, you know, all of that stuff. And so, you know, Quincy really helped him too. But like, Michael Jackson's ambition was what brought about the sound of Bad. Yeah. That remarkable new, like nothing you've ever heard before sound and attitude.
So. And the like we're saying that his, like, no one ever did like the hee and hoo and all that sort of stuff, and like Shimon and all this stuff that's kind of like a joke now, but
yeah,
no one did that. You know what I mean? No. Like, you'd have like soul singers would do these little inflections and things like from gospel, but what he was doing was beyond gospel. It was just so interesting, and like saying all these sort of like, it's beatboxing. There is beatboxing all the way through this. And I think a lot of it is just Michael Jackson's mouth. You know, he's just doing the whole thing. It is crazy. So with over the course of Thriller and also Bad, you know, Michael Jackson has duetted with, you know, two of the greatest pop singers, soul singers of all time, in Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder.
Right? Stevie Wonder.
And yet... Yep. When Michael Jackson comes in any of those songs, whether it's, you know, The Girl Is Mine, Just Good Friends, Say, 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 it's like, wow, step back. Yeah. Like, this guy is the singer. You know what I mean? When he comes in Say, 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 it's like, your breath is taken away. And this is Paul McCartney.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it's Paul McCartney.
He's royalty.
It is, and it's the same on the Can You Feel It? You know, on Can You Feel It by the Jacksons. All the other guys are doing that. If you look around, and that's all great. And then Michael comes in, and it's just like, whoa! Like, he's just blown the doors off. And you can see it's like, you know, for whatever else you want to say about him, the kid had maybe the greatest pop singer of all time in terms of a pure vocalist.
Yeah, his voice cut through in so many different ways. It cut through as just being a unique voice. It just cut through as the tone of his voice was just so clear. It was like striking a bell, you know, it just rang out. And he further developed his voice throughout his career to be even more unique. Because when he was a young kid, he was just an amazing singer. Yeah. He was just always getting compared to Stevie Wonder because Stevie Wonder was the other young kid, teenager that was on Motown. That's why that's how he got the name Stevie Wonder, because he was like a boy wonder. Yeah. You know, he was a talented prodigy at like, you know, 13, 14. So they were always comparing the two. And that's what he was. He was just a really precocious and talented singer as a young child. But then later in his career, when he wanted to just be so singular that he just made, like, he devoted his entire life to being the most unique singer of all time. It wasn't just enough for him to just be a really talented singer. You know, he changed his vocalizations and the shamones and the hee-hees and all that stuff that you mentioned. Like, those are things that he wanted just to make him his own voice in the entire world of music forever. Like, he created his own niche of a style of singing, and like people who try to devote their entire career to replicating it, like Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars is the most shameless about, like, just being trying to be a Michael Jackson clone. You know, you've definitely got your Justin Timberlakes out there and stuff like that that are just heavily influenced by him. Usher, you know, people like that. But like, Bruno Mars is just trying to play straight out of the MJ playbook, and it still isn't the same.
No,
it's not the same at all.
No,
because he just constantly pushed it to a different place.
It was so unique to him, and it was, like you're saying, like all the little, like all that sort of stuff all the way through it. And you have to think, like, in the studio, he's going, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'm going to do another track now, but this is just me going." What the hell is that? You know, but yeah, it was and then, but then even like, I was rewatching Eddie Murphy, the early Eddie Murphy stand up, and he's like, Michael Jackson in the most masculine man. I mean, but he's talked about the fact that, like, in She's Out of My Life, when, I know that's from Thriller, but, you know, the fact that he'll do these ballads where he's almost in tears, you know, and he's, it's so expressive, this full range that we get on these albums. But yeah, it is insane. I mean, on that point, you know, we don't want to labour the point because this is a music podcast, but does it affect you now? Can you listen to Michael Jackson and still enjoy it? Or is the shadow of everything that we now know about him, does that impact your listening now?
It does. It does, only because I feel like it should. It doesn't mitigate how much I want to listen to Michael Jackson all the time, but I feel like it would be doing, like, I felt like I had to do my part as a Michael Jackson fan to kind of think about that and to not just leap to his defense or, you know, whatever. And I felt like I had to take some time and not listen, you know, because I'm a huge fan. I love it. I love to listen to Michael Jackson. Nothing puts me in a better mood. I have a playlist. First, it was on my iTunes back in the iTunes days, and I have one now on Spotify. And the playlist is called MJ Day. And it is all my favorite Michael Jackson songs, and it's like 150 songs. Like, it's like over 100 songs.
It's like all of
them. That's my favorite. Those are my favorite Michael Jackson song. That's why the playlist is called MJ Day, because you spend your entire day listening to it, and it's the best. When I want to have a good day at work, I put on MJ Day, because today's MJ Day. Nothing bad can happen today. It's MJ Day. Like, I'm listening to Michael Jackson all day long, and I'm in a good mood, and I'm feeling good, and I feel strong, and I feel energetic and stuff, and it's good. Like, it's just, you know, all of that stuff. And so, like, it's going to be a part of my life forever. I'm always going to be a Michael Jackson fan. I'm always going to be somebody who cherishes his music and, you know, what he had to say. Like, obviously, I cannot, it's extremely naive and ignorant to not acknowledge how troubled he was and how much pain it caused to, you know, others and, you know, and children and stuff like that. It's pretty sad, you know, it's pretty bad, but like, it's his music is going to be something that's in my life forever. And it is gradually coming back. It took a while, but like, you're just not going to get, I can't turn it off. If it's on, if it just comes on, you know, obviously Michael Jackson is still a thing that you just still hear incidentally without turning it on yourself. Yeah. If somebody starts rocking some PYT, you know, from Thriller, I'm going to jam on it. I don't care. Like, I'm not going to say, turn that off. You know, like, I love it. I just love it. I'm a Michael Jackson fan. I will always be a Michael Jackson fan. I just respect. I think that there's people, there's so few people in this world that have existed like him. You know, you got your John Lennons and you got your Michael Jacksons. And like, these are the people who changed the world with how much they had to say and how much they had to give artistically. Liberian girl, you came and you changed my world. The love so brand new. Liberian girl, you came and you changed me, girl. A feeling so true. Liberian girl, you know that you came and you changed my world. In a scene, and she says, do you love me? And he says so earnestly, I love you, Liberian girl. And
like, I mean, Lennon's an interesting one as well, because, you know, the whole separating the art from the artist thing. John Lennon was a pretty horrible human being, right? John Lennon beat women, right? Yes. John Lennon did some pretty nasty things to a lot of people. You know, he was shot and now he's revered. And yeah, it's known, you know, and there are people that are aware of, you know, the things that he did, you know, and he sang about it and he talked about it and he was honest about it, you know. Run for your life. I'd rather see a dead little girl than to be with another man.
That sounds messed like that up.
And now like, ooh, that doesn't quite that pass the test of time.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But yeah, you don't have that. I mean, obviously it's like, you know, well, it's not necessarily comparable, but it is hard, that thing of separating the art from the artist. And I did have that. I mean, just to let you know, I'm 4 years older than you, so I was born 80. So Michael Jackson was just always around forever. Mm-hmm. He was the first person I had posters of on my wall. When Bad came out, I had a cassette, and it was the first cassette, like, with the inlay card. I would look at it, and the inlay card was all that. I can still picture it now, even though I haven't looked at it for years. It's all the sort of images of him in black and white, but it's kind of warped. And you know, I'd read the, you know, I'd listened to it so much, and I'd just read the list, the track listing, and the songwriters and the production credits and all that sort of stuff in a way I'd never had before. And it was Bad. I mean, a Thriller, I had, like, I think my older siblings had on record, and so it was put onto a cassette for me that I listened to. But it was Bad was my album, and that was the one that I just would listen to all the time. And then the Moonwalk film came out, like Moonwalker, you know, with the bunny and all that sort of stuff, and like you know, and that was just, I loved that. And but the thing is, he was, as a kid, you know, as a kid that didn't actually meet him, right, just point this out,
right,
as a kid that was a few thousand miles away, he wasn't just a singer, he was a superhero, because he wasn't just, you know, this sort of, like, you know, like Rick Astley or whatever, you know what I mean?
No,
this guy was bigger than anything. This guy wasn't just I mean, when we saw him in Moonwalker, like turning into a giant robot or whatever, I can't even remember all the things he does in that film, that is pretty insane. But it was like, and there was the video game. Yeah, it was the Moonwalker video game.
Yeah, in the arcade.
Yeah, he was. Like, I remember seeing David Copperfield on TV, right, the musician and the magician, and thinking, I know magic isn't real, but I think he's actually magic, right? I think he has actually got some sort of devil powers or whatever. And I thought the same with Michael Jackson. I think this guy is actually superhuman. Like, no one can dance like that. Like, it's impossible to be that good at dancing and singing. He's a superhero.
Yeah, and he also did things like invent shoes that made it seem like he was doing things superhuman on the dance floor to do the lean. You know, he has a patent for those shoes and that stage mechanism that pops up and you click your heels into it. And he did the lean with his dancers.
Being like Smooth Criminal.
That is just visionary stuff, you know, like I have several Michael Jackson DVDs, and one of my favorites to watch is the entire concert from I think it's Budapest or something from 1993 or 4 or something. It's right after Dangerous. I think it's on the Dangerous tour, and it's that iconic thing that he did at the beginning of a lot of his shows where there's literally like 20, 30,000 people out there, right? He'd play these massive shows for tens of thousands of people. And he would get shot up from underneath the stage, up 10 feet into the air, and then land on the ground and stand still as a statue with his sunglasses on for like 7-8 minutes straight. Like, he would just minute after minute after minute just stand there completely still without moving, and people were just absolutely losing their minds the entire time. Like, there were people fainting in the crowd, being carried out by EMTs and, like, loaded onto ambulances because they're just losing it and fainting and falling apart because everyone's just losing their minds because this guy is so larger than life that he could just stand on a stage with sunglasses on and not do anything. And then the first move he does is up to the sunglasses, take them off, and then stand still for another 3 minutes. And he's just like heaving, breathing with his like shoulders going up and down, you know? And he just like was so passionate about everything that he did, you know, like his his stage performance was, it was superhuman. It was a supernatural ability of energy and singing and dancing. And like, you could tell how much passion he would put into it. You know, he would talk about, he would say in interviews that after he comes off stage, like sometimes he would just collapse because his legs didn't work anymore or his bones didn't work anymore. And then after he's off stage, he's just a guy again with like, you know, with like bad hips or bad knees or whatever. But he just had the adrenaline and the passion to fuel these performances. And like I said, like you called him a superhero, that lean, nobody knew how he did that for so long. It's like, how is he doing that? And they thought, oh, it's just movie magic, because it was in the music video for Smooth Criminal. It's just movie magic. But then he said, no, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to come to your town and do it on stage right in front of your face.
Wow.
You know, and he did that with the ball joints that would rise up out of the stage. Right before Smooth Criminal, the whole stage would go dark, and they had that guy waving like a firecracker around. It was like a thing of TNT with like a long fuse, and it was just like, it was while they were setting up for Smooth Criminal. You know, it was during that, it wasn't before the song, it was during the music break, the interlude, right before it comes in with the doom doo 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 doom doo doo. That's when they do that's when they break into the lean, you know? And that's when the stage lights would come back on, because they go over to the ball joints that come out of the stage and they click the heels of their shoes into it so that their heels are anchored down into the stage, and that's how they could do the lean. You know. But still, it took a superhuman amount of core strength and like lower body strength to be able to hold that still, even if your legs are anchored to the ground. And that was like, still, he wanted to be a superhero. He wanted to be somebody that could do things that nobody on this earth could do.
I loved Smooth Criminal. That was my favorite track on that album. And when you listen back to it now, it's a very sparse track. There's very little going on. You've got that one ostinato.
It's throughout the whole song. Yeah,
it's basically the whole song. It's a blues. It's a blues, really. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's not a, you know, you've got like, It's a very, very stripped back song. And when you think of this, like, it must be like a lush percussive album. And then when you sort of just think about it in the abstract, and you listen to it, it's like, no, it's very stripped back. But I remember, this is how much I loved Michael Jackson, watching like the Brit Awards, whatever it would have been, 1988, 1989 maybe, and like praying that Smooth Criminal won Best Video. And like just almost like, I would give anything for this to win Best Video. I cared so much about that winning Best Video. And
that's amazing.
I remember that so vividly. It was really like a football team. You know, it's like, he's my team. I support this guy and he's everything. And then just to say, there was the gap, like talking about a gap earlier when we were talking about Green Day, that gap from bad to dangerous for me, from being 7 years old to 11 years old. By the time Dangerous came out, I bought it. I remember being really excited when Black or White, the video for Black or White dropped and things like that. But it kind of, I was like, kind of done. He waited too long.
The magic was gone a little bit.
The magic was kind of gone a little bit. And in that period, 80, and I mean, it's not like by 91, by the time I'm 11, I'm sort of some sophisticated musical person. You know, I was still an idiot.
Too
but
cool for Michael
I think
Jackson.
By then as well, by the time you get into like Heal the World and stuff like that, I mean, I was like, oh, okay, this isn't cool. Heal the World isn't cool. And and then when you get into like the sort of the They Don't Care About Us and Murder on Dance Floor.
That's my favorite. They Don't Care About Us is my single favorite Michael Jackson song.
Oh, is it? Oh, really?
Casey and I, we covered that song in our band in Albuquerque, and we made like, we did like an 8 minute long, like epic recording of it. That is like a major thing that we did as like a, we played a Michael Jackson, Casey and I and our band played a Michael Jackson tribute show the year that he died. Like just a couple months after he died, they organized a tribute show and we got into it and we played They Don't Care About Us. We played Is It Scary from the Blood on the Dance Floor EP and we played Just Another Part of Me from Bad. Those were our three songs that we did for the thing. But the thing we focused the most on was our big cover of They Don't Care About Us. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just had to throw that in there. Everybody has come from the life. I never wanted to do the wrong. And the vision of police brutality. I'm tired of being a victim of his. You're ripping me, I'm a proud of forgotten. I left you coming to fulfill his prophecy. He set me free. Skinhead, deadhead, everybody gone bad. Trepidation, speculation, every allegation in the suit on the news. Everybody talks, black man, black man. No, I was just saying I was kind of done. Like that was it. I was sort of like ready to move on to other things by that point. Like rockier stuff and like dancier stuff and sort of Michael, you know, and also at the time I was sort of really getting into football, like soccer, football. And so you know, the Michael Jackson posters come down and like Eric Cantona posters go up, who is my favourite football player for Manchester United and things. And so so you know, and then it's sort of getting into movies and stuff, so it's like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction posters start going up, and then Michael Jackson was just like, okay, that's something from my childhood that can kind of go away now. And then also I think it was then, you know, because let's not pretend that the allegations and stuff have appeared now, you know, the Geordie Chandler payoff was what, 93 or something, so early 90s,
you know, it was around for a long time. But we used to sing like because obviously this is the crazy thing about it as well, that you just sort of forget that if you don't actually point it out. And if you imagine explaining Michael Jackson to an alien or to someone, you know, like, so wait, he was black, but he made himself look like a basically a white woman. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then he had the balls to do a song that said, "It don't matter if you're black or white," when he just turned himself from black to white. And you go, this is the most ridiculous, like the balls on that guy, you know, to have the guts to do that. And and we used to sing like, heal the world, make it a better place. What was it? Burn Michael Jackson and recycle his face. Like that was like, that was a little tune, that, you know, because that was the, you know, he was Wacko Jacko and stuff. But when you think about that, it's just like, really, that actually really happened, You know what I mean? Yes. It's sort of, it's just mad to think. But
yeah.
Anyway, there you go.
Well, you know, he was a very troubled person, and he always was a really troubled person. And, you know, as cynical as it is to say, or I don't know if it's cynical, but just dark to say, like, that makes a more unique perspective, and that makes more impactful art, you know, I think. Yeah. And the fact that he did all those things with plastic surgery and with his public persona and the gradually higher pitch of his voice throughout the years of his speaking voice, you know, these are all things that he did that were really bizarre, that are undeniably bizarre. And he was just a really bizarre human. But like, I think that there was a lot of pain there. There was a lot of being so troubled, and like that, you know, I respond to those kinds of things, you know, that like the more I delved into who he was and, you know, where this music came from, it made me more invested in his music, because I was more interested. I was more fascinated by where these statements came from, you know, like you said, like after his big transformation, you know, it was gradual, because bad is the exact middle point between like where we saw him in Thriller.
Yeah.
A pretty normal looking black dude to dangerous. Bad was that exact middle point. He kind of looked exactly in the middle between those two things, but he just started to look more and more bizarre throughout his career. And then when he makes that big debut of Black or White, that video, you know, there's just something so fascinating there. Like, what kind of human being is this? You know, like, he's a really bizarre human in that. And I think that he never like just said, oh, I'm done. I'm too weird now. I can't put myself out there anymore because I went too far. Mm. Like he always was able to put out stuff that was, you know, contextualized kind of what was going on, or, you know, where he was. Like, he always wrote reflective songs about like being Wacko Jacko. Mm. Like, there's a song from history from 96 called Tabloid Junkie. That is one of my favorite Michael Jackson songs. That is literally just about, The beginning of the track, I don't know if you've heard it, but the beginning of the track is just a bunch of sound clips of different news people saying things about him, all kind of played over the top of each other, to the point where it just becomes this like cacophony, you know.
In the news today, from the Strange and Weird Fact File, singer Michael Jackson sleeps in an oxygen chamber. The singer says that the hyperbaric chamber has the benefits of reversing the aging process.
And it's just song, you know, the lyrics are just about his life, his public persona, and how, you know, people, the you know, the tabloids have been after him and stuff, and, you know, and how that shaped him and in response. And it's just, I think it's really interesting that he continued to try to produce even throughout all of his troubles and in his weird, bizarre life that he had ever since. Being a kid in Jackson 5, being abused and being way too famous than he could have handled, you know, all of that stuff.
Mm.
It's just crazy stuff.
It's interesting, like you're saying about the that tune. I don't remember. I did listen to History when it came out, but say I was in, I'd sort of nailed my flag to the Britpop mast at that point, so I was just not really into it. But Leave Me Alone, similar, you know, with all the within the video, and he's dancing with the Elephant Man and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so
I love Leave Me Alone.
That is a brilliant song, and I just wanted to move on to the fact that like the place in history, like we're talking about, you know, where this, we've always got talked about where he was, having had Thriller, this unbelievably successful album, but still a funk pop album basically. To then, this was just so different, and like we've talked about, the fact that it did just take pop music to this other level. This wasn't this wasn't another pop star. This was something so different. But then going on from that, I mean, it's sort of, it's funny now that like the biggest genre like coming through, I think I'd put like hip-hop's probably the biggest, but so the biggest one coming through now, having a sort of teenage daughter myself, like the biggest thing in the world right now is K-pop, right? Mm-hmm. These Korean pop bands like BTS are just another level, right? And the level of marketing and the level of performance, and they are called idols in that world, and they are probably the closest thing I've seen to the way that Michael Jackson was marketed, and the way that they've just perfected pop in that way, the artifice, the manufacturing, the way they package it all together, the videos, mm-hmm. everything. And it was interesting. I was watching, like my daughter showed me like they basically made like a, almost like the Avengers of K-pop, like this, of this one record label has grabbed like all of its best people from all its different bands and put them together in one band called Super M. And they came out with this, like this big tune. And it was like, this is their push to be like a big global one to take on BTS. And the video was basically really similar to Scream, the Michael and Janet tune. And it was like, and so I had to pull it. I had to say, look, that's great, but look at this, you know, and this was so exciting. Once again, I mean, I know I was saying I'd fallen off Michael a bit by then, but I remember Scream coming out and just being like, what the hell is this? Monster. It was the most expensive video ever. And just as a piece of music, oh, it was just insane.
It might still be the most expensive video ever. I don't know what that currently sits at, but I know for like at least 10, 15 years after, it was still the most expensive music video ever made by a huge margin. Mm. He just threw so much money at that video. And it was like something like the it was like 80 million. And then the next most expensive video was like 8 million or something. Like he just put like tens of millions of dollars above everything else for that. And that was such a big statement. I just remember how big of a deal that was when Scream came out. And I love that song so much. But like when you also think about, I just wanted to talk briefly about the mix of songs on Bad, because like you've got things like Bad and The Way You Make Me Feel, which are like, this is the main like kind of thrust of the sound that we're doing right now. And it's kind of like, you know, morphed from the old sound, but it's just sounds a lot more modern. And, you know, he's starting to integrate in a lot more rasp into his voice than he did before. He had a very smooth voice before, and now he's doing the more like yelling, you know, like, I'm bad, I'm bad. Like he's like screaming that stuff, you know, and that's not something he did in any of his previous hits. And that became something that Michael Jackson was known for after was. And then you've got the video for The Way You Make Me Feel, which was, you know, the second, I want to say the second single, it might not have been, but where he just starts screaming and destroying a car with his rage. You know, like that's just another thing. It's like, wow, what is going on with this guy?
Yeah.
You know? But then you've got songs like Liberian Girl. I don't know if you Liberian Girl. Like that is just a smooth as glass, just like tight as a drum, badass, like R&B song, you know? Yeah. Like it's not abrasive, it's not loud, it's not that in your face like pop stuff that he was doing. It's just a really smooth, silky, nice, like amazing R&B song. And then you've got songs like Dirty Diana, you know? Like that's just straight rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a rock song.
Yeah.
You know, and that is so cool too. You know, you got stuff like that in there, and you know, got more throwback songs like, you know, Just Good Friends with Stevie Wonder. Sounds like it could have been on Thriller. you know, it was kind of more that throwback stuff that, you know, and then you've got another part of me, which was part of Captain EO. We should mention Captain EO. I'm sure you,
I went to see that at Disneyland Paris when it came out, and that I'd never seen a 3D film before as well. So like, just as I say, this is when I was 12 as well. So prime time, like Michael Jackson in 3D. Yeah. This is the best thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
It's like you can reach out and grab his foot as he's flying away from you, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. Come back, Michael. Yeah. Actually, stay away. That's fine. We're sending out. But no, I completely agree. I mean, I love Speed Demon. I've got a really good memory of like sitting in the car with my headphones on and, you know, and just sort of in my parents' car and just sort of like, you know, driving along and sort of pretending we're on a racetrack, staring out of the window like, Speed Demon, be going to get it, God, put up a pop. It's just brilliant, isn't it? You know,
and right? Yeah, and like what you're talking about with like the vocalizations, that's like boom, you know, like that, those little rhythmic percussive things that he would do with his voice is just so, it sounds so bizarre when you first listen to it, but it's like, no, but you're jamming though, aren't you? Yeah. You're jamming. Like, it's weird that he would do that. You can't imagine standing in a vocal booth and just holding headphones to your ears and going, choo! Like that kind of stuff, but like it worked, right? Like,
yeah,
it's awesome. Yeah, that song is so, so badass. Yeah, yeah.
Any other tracks that stand out for you from the album?
I mean, I think like, I think Liberian Girl is one of my favorite songs. It's like one of my favorite Michael Jackson songs. I just melodically, and like, it's just such a cool song. I love it so much. I mean, I think Leave Me Alone as the last track. I think that was another thing that was like him starting to really like write about himself and about the kind of person that he was. And I respect him so much for that, you know, because like his prior songs like Thriller, you know, that's not about anything. He didn't even write that song. You know, it's just, it's just about scary movies and how cool they are. But you started to have him write songs about things he cared about saying. And I love Leave Me Alone as a song. I think that's one of the strongest songs on the album. And I think, you know, it's kind of like saying Imagine is the best John Lennon song, but Man in the Mirror is such an important song. I think that it became a big thing for him. Like I said earlier, like that became part of his whole career going forward. But Man in the Mirror was like the first time he really had a statement like that. And it's just an amazing song.
I remember seeing the seeing an interview with the guys who did all the backing vocals on it. I think it might be in that it might be in that 6 Feet from Stardom. I don't know if you've seen that. There's a documentary about backing vocalists.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
It might be in that, but like the gospel guys that come in and do the Man in the Mirror, and it might be from that doc, it might be something else, but this huge thing about how they built that, you know, and just the, there is an unbelievable, you know, just as it kicks in at the end with the gospel, that is a, you know, I think because it's Michael Jackson kind of, you know, man, he's such a different character that a song like Man in the Mirror doesn't go down as, you know, like Let It Be or like, you know, I don't know, Bridge Over Troubled Water or something is like one of the greatest songs of all time because it is so of its time and it is so connected with him as a person. But as a piece of music, it's untouchable, really.
Doesn't make that
I Just Can't Stop Loving You. You know, it's just a pure pop, like, ballad duet with, like, all the little vocals.
Saeed
and
Garrett.
If I stop, tell me, no. You know, all that stuff. It's just amazing, you know.
Yes, totally.
I just love it.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I love that song. I mean, it's such, like, I mean, I remember when I really wanted to dive deep on Michael Jackson. It was, like, much later when I grew up listening to him and I knew all the hits and stuff. And I had the CD, like, I had Dangerous, and I knew Dangerous really well. But it was later when I started to become, like, a super fan, like, in my late teens, that I started to go back. And I remember being, like, picking up this album and, like, Thriller and looking at the track list, because I wasn't somebody who could tell you anything about, like, a Michael Jackson deep track or a B-side or something. I remember picking up this album and looking at the track list and being like, what the hell? I already know all these songs. Like,
there was like eight.
Every song's a fucking hit on this album.
Yeah.
You know? And it's the same thing with Thriller. You look at the track list and it's like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, Billie Jean, Thriller, PYT, She's Out of My Life, like, Girl Is Mine, and and Wanna Be Starting Something, and like, I know all these songs.
Yeah.
There's, there's very, like, few deep tracks.
Crazy.
And that's just a testament, you know, like, and it's not that he would just, like, it's not like a Maroon 5 situation where they just didn't want to put out a new album. And it's like, well, just put out another single from that first album again. And we'll just keep pumping that album for like 13 years until we're ready to put something else out. Like, he would do things like, I mean, I know it was kind of a longer break between Bad and Dangerous, but between Thriller, was that 83?
84.
I guess it's like 4 years. That's not, I thought it was a little bit sooner than that, but I guess 4 years is about, that's a little bit on the long side, I guess. But still, you know, it's like they would have, I mean, all of these songs were strong enough to like make a big impact, you know, that they put out albums with zero chuffa, you know, when you've got a band like Queen that I love, and I think that Freddie Mercury is maybe the greatest male vocalist of all time, like even more so than Michael Jackson in some ways, and it's a band that I care so deeply about, but you have some stinkers on some of those albums, you know, like, it really is, there's some songs that are just like, what is this song, is nothing. Like, but with Michael Jackson and bands like, you know, that's like Michael Jackson, and that's like Beatles territory where you just really don't have There is no chuffa when it comes to these albums, you know.
There's because they're all so different as well. There's no there's no two songs that are the same. So you know, even if it's you prefer one or the other, you know, but it isn't, none of them are bad. They're all you know, such brilliantly produced, such brilliantly written and brilliantly performed songs.
Yeah.
Oh God. So yeah, well, I think we know the answer to this, but does it deserve to make the 1001 list for you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. And I would make a case for almost every Michael Jackson album to be on the 1001, not because I think they all had the same amount of impact, but I just think they're all really special. That's something that I've discovered about Michael Jackson that made me like him even more, was that the more I would delve into his discography, even when people started stop caring about him, the more I found things that I thought mattered, that were important.
Fair enough. And you know, and finally, just picking up on that, you know, about his personal life and obviously the accusations and everything. If we were to strike every artist that has had accusations about them or has been done for, you know, criminal behavior, we would probably lose about half this book. We would lose a lot of artists. Let's be real.
Absolutely.
Michael Jackson is probably the one of the most clear and obvious ones that could be attacked. But, you know, are we losing Serge Gainsbourg? Are we losing, like, you know, like we said, John Lennon? You know, you know, there's a lot of people on this list that have done some pretty bad things, you know, in especially by modern standards. So, you know, so you do have to appreciate and say, look, this is about the history of music, and you cannot take away Michael Jackson from the history of music, because you know, he was everything for that period. He was just the biggest and most important artist of the of the 1980s by far.
Yeah, and all of pop music today goes back to Michael Jackson. Yeah. These big, enormous shows that almost all pop artists, like, they all do the Michael Jackson live show. Mm. Like, Michael Jackson would do a lot of medleys, and it would just be this nonstop energy, bigger production on stage with different outfits and dancers and all that stuff. All of that started with Michael Jackson, and everybody does that now. Katy Perry does that, and Justin Timberlake does that, and like Taylor Swift does that. Mm-hmm. And like everybody does that because Michael Jackson did it first. Mm-hmm. He was the first person to go out there and make this tour like a humongous production and bring this incredibly heightened experience to everybody's towns. Like, nobody did that before him, and that is something that people still continue to do, and it's all stuff that, like, Michael Jackson did it first. He did so many things that, like, just still resonate today in a majorly huge way. Yeah.
Well, there we go. I don't think we can take it anywhere else other than that. Joel, thank you so much for your time. Great.
Thank you, James. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot.
And where can the kids find you online if they want to look you up or the podcast?
The podcast is Movie Multiverse Podcast that I do with Casey. Hopefully you can make it work with him to do something with him for this podcast. I was afraid that I took maybe something that he might have wanted to do, which is maybe the dookie of it all. I don't know what else he would be planning to do. I'm sure there's stuff in there that he would want to do. But yeah, we're the Movie Multiverse Podcast. We're on all the different podcast places. You know, you can find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all those other places. And I'm doing music, but I'm in a break right now, so there's nothing really to plug there just yet, but there will be.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Speak to you soon.
Thank you, James. Later, man.
Okay, so this album features duets with Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, right?
No, two Paul McCartney great... was on Thriller.
No, on, we've got there's what'd you call The Girl Is Mine.
That's on Thriller.
There's a Paul McCartney song on this one, isn't there?
Mm-mm. But he did a song with Paul McCartney on Paul McCartney's album.
Oh, the Say, Say, Say.
Say, Say, Say. That was Paul McCartney's song that Michael Jackson guested on, and then Paul McCartney guested on The Girl Is Mine on Thriller.
All right, hold on. Let's start that again then, shall we?
Okay. I'm sorry.
This is the great thing about podcasts. This is editing.
Yeah.
I look so intelligent.